Welcome back to the Bulls Beat Bulls fans. Doug Tonis here with you discussing our Chicago Bulls 4-9 after defeating the Cleveland Cavaliers as I record this on a Sunday evening. Also, congrats to the Bears 6-3. Looking good if you're a football fan, but we will stick to the Chicago Bulls. So the Bulls, they've been playing better as of late since that Golden State game where they just got throttled. You know, they've at least had close losses. They've been competitive. They've won a couple games. They've actually now won two of their last three, which is just, you know, great for them, I suppose, given how things have gone. And I'm still kind of stuck in between this state of wondering whether I think the Bulls should tank or not tank. And we'll see what happens there. I think I've come to the conclusion that they probably can't tank well enough. You're 4-9 right now, and overall, the Chicago Bulls, if they were to end the season today, would be in a three-way tie for fifth place. And, you know, that's not really an exciting place to be in the lottery. I mean, I think Phoenix, Cleveland, Washington, Atlanta are the four teams worst. The Knicks and the Timberwolves, actually, are the teams that are tied. Things really went far south there. We'll get into that a little bit later as well. But for now, we'll focus on the Bulls. The thing is, I think when they get everyone healthy again, this team is going to be much better, and it'll be harder to lose games at the level that is required to really get that top-end draft pick. So I'm going to start off with some discussion around Zach LaVine. And so LaVine has really had a very strong year by any stretch. I mean, there's no way you could be disappointed with what Zach LaVine has done this year if you're a Bulls fan, because it's so much better, really, than what we could have expected otherwise, right? I mean, his PER was outstanding. It's now dropped to about 20, which is still great. And he's now seeing double and triple teams like pretty regularly. At the end of that Cleveland game, they just moved everyone towards LaVine when he had the ball. You see him sometimes taking these bad shots. And so the real question I really have with LaVine at this point is Zach LaVine taking some of these bad shots because there's really no one else to take the shots and he's got to? Or is his shot selection just really bad? And I think it's a little bit of a mix of both. I do think he has to do a lot more. I also think that fatigue, to some degree, is a little bit of a factor. You can't just dribble around and drive over and over and over again, play after play after play, and just be in this constant sprint mode. So I think he heaves some of these jumpers just because, after a while, he gets tired. I do think that, all in all, one of the problems that he needs to work on, though, is trying to just not take some of these jumpers where he holds the ball for a long time and then just takes step back long twos or these long threes. You just got to try and move the ball around. At the same time, I get how difficult that is with how things have gone with the other players on this team. It's just very challenging when there's not a lot of other options, a lot of other people who can draw any attention away from you. And so I think that is a kind of one of the struggles that we see. And he still makes some of these bonehead plays, like on Cleveland, where he calls out for Wendell Carter to come set a pick. And then as Carter runs, he throws this oddball pass to Carter that just kind of goes to nowhere, and Carter isn't able to retrieve it. And he threw the pass like right before Carter set the pick. It's like, what are you doing? He just makes some of these oddball decisions sometimes. So Zach still has some room to grow, but he's been outstanding. I mean, he really has been outstanding. The finishing at the rim has been great. His three-point percentage has dropped now. He's around 35%, and I think that is part of just the different shots he's taking that are not great shots because there are not good shots to be had. And I think what will be very exciting to see, or maybe very scary to see if it doesn't turn out this way, is when Lauri Markkanen comes back and there's a legitimate second guy in the offense who can become a big threat. What does Zach LaVine look like at that point? You know, is he still making some of these same decisions? Or is the ball moving more, and is there better shots available? And so he's not taking some of these types of shots. And I think that's what we'll really have to see. And that'll define, I think, how well Zach LaVine has really progressed. And if he's really turning into kind of a star and a good team player, or if he's become a much better individual player, and we're happy about that, and it's still probably a good contract at this point, but maybe still not going to be the guy who can lead you somewhere because he can't get rid of some of those bad habits. And so I think that is really ultimately what will tell the tale of the tape, is when Lowry comes back, to some extent Dunn. But right now, to me, Dunn doesn't even look like a guy who should be taking a lot of shots. So it's really Lowry, and we'll see how things go there. And now we're going to talk about Ryan Arcidiacono. Outstanding game against the Cavaliers, but really all season long, Diakono has played in a way that is very consistent, extremely efficient, 72% true shooting percentage right now. That is surreal. And obviously the big thing is that he's not taking a lot of shots. But I will say the amount of shots he's taking is not so ridiculously poor. He's averaging 10.1 points and 6.4 assists per 36 minutes. I think that is fine for a backup point guard in terms of his total like output there. So I think he's doing okay. I would like him to be a little bit more aggressive with his shooting, particularly with the three. There's a few times he passes up threes to throw to other guys who are not as good of shooters. You have to recognize at this point you're shooting 53% from the three-point line. You're the best three-point shooter on the team right now. Maybe Antonio Blakeney, who's at 47.5%, maybe he's like right around that mark too, and you could pass up a shot to get him a wide-open look or a corner look. But you should not be passing up shots to get Justin Holiday three-point shots. You should take those threes yourself, and I think the Bulls would be better off if he did. We did get to see quite a bit more aggressiveness from Archie Diakono against the Cavs, and I thought that was nice to see in his first start. If he keeps up that level of play, I mean, he's just a solid player at that point. I think defensively, he still leaves a lot to be desired. I know in the broadcast, everyone likes to talk about how great he's playing defensively and how he's hustling. And I will say, Archie Diakono is willing to throw his body on the floor. He's willing to scrap. Yeah, he's feisty. He gets in there. But you just see him get blown up. I mean, Colin Sexton had a career high against Diakono and has been terrible. So it also shows he's able to get blown up pretty easily by some pedestrian-type guards because he does struggle to stay in front of guys. Even though I think he plays well positionally, he's just not quite the athlete he needs to be. We also saw a point where Sexton just stood in front of Archie Diakono and decided, I'm going to lock this guy down. And after that point, it was like Diakono could barely even pass the ball out of his hands. He could not cope with the pressure at all. And then the Bulls quickly shifted to have Zach LaVine bring the ball up the floor and play Diakono off the ball after that for the rest of the fourth period. And so I think Diakono definitely has some weaknesses, but we may have found a legitimate backup guard. Those types of things are not big problems in a backup guard. There may be bigger problems in a starting guard. And also, if he plays off the ball, where he's just your spot-up shooter, then some of those things aren't as big of an issue too, because he's been an excellent shooter, and you don't necessarily need him to be in that role where he's trying to make the pass and run the offense. But I think he's been very good. I've been very happy with how well he's played, and it's really been nice with Chris Dunn out to see Diakono kind of step up. And with that said, Cameron Payne, he's been out of the rotation. Shaquille Harrison is now the backup point guard and has jumped Payne in the rotation. I think for now that's probably pretty good. I don't know in the long run that Payne is worse than both Harrison and Diakono, but I know he's playing worse than both of them now. And I think we've seen Payne enough at this point that I think we feel like, yeah, it's okay. It's okay that we don't try and get this guy any special burn at this point. It's fine. So we'll see how things go if Harrison and Diakono stay above Payne in the rotation. And of course, when Dunn gets back, which isn't so far away from now, when Dunn gets back, it'll probably just be Dunn and Diakono, and we'll see if either Payne or Harrison get off the bench at all. But I think Diakono's got a nice story. It's great to see him play well. I hope he just continues to keep doing what he's doing. I know there's been a lot of Kirk Heimrich comparisons. I don't really see a whole lot of Kirk Heimrich. Kirk Heimrich was a pretty physical player. He was definitely more of an athlete. It was not nearly as good a shooter. Was someone who did not make the smart pass as much, wasn't as good of an assist to turnover ratio guy as Diakono. I think they're actually reasonably different players in many ways. So I don't see the similarities other than that they're white guards really being there all that much. So hopefully things continue to go well there. I've got a little bit of a complaint with Fred Hoiberg. And I think at this point, I'm fairly certain Fred Hoiberg is not the coach. He is not the guy. Right, like this guy should be done after this year, pretty much no matter what the Bulls do. Unless they end up with like 45 wins or something crazy, then I'll let him play out his last year. I still won't extend him, but I'll let him play out his last year. But what I've seen repeatedly from Hoiberg is he's just bizarre-ass substitutions. Like he does not understand the offense-defense substitution. The Bulls are going out. They're trying to close out one defensive possession to end the game, and he pulls Wendell Carter for Jabari Parker. And now to make me feel like an idiot, Jabari Parker actually gets a block to seal the victory. So I guess it worked out okay. But what are you doing there? And he'll keep Levine out there for defensive possessions. I guess at this point, the thing I'll say is Zach might still be one of the top five defenders you could go with right now on this team, just because there's not many options. So the options are limited with all the injuries, and I guess maybe that impacts things. But I don't know how, on a critical defensive possession, that you pull Wendell Carter Jr. out of the game and you put in Jabari Parker. It's just ridiculous. It's just a ridiculous thing to do. And I've seen that type of thing happen pretty repeatedly. And so when thinking of these substitutions, though, at the end of games and watching the Bulls trying to hold off the Cavs, I started thinking, if you're at the end of a game and you're going to put out five guys to try and close out the game, I can't come up with a list of five guys that I'm like, yep, these are the five. Like, there's at least two guys on that list that I think I don't want on the floor at the end of a game. And so I've kind of come up with Wendell Carter is there for sure. Levine is there for sure. At this point, I think Ryan Arcidiacono is there for sure. And now who are my other two guys? I mean, Justin Holiday has been pretty bad. I thought it was he was shooting a little better earlier, but he's now regressing to the mean on his three-point percentage. Doesn't do anything else. Like, I mean, literally, like, nothing else at all. Jabari Parker, you just have no idea what you're going to get from him. Can be very inefficient offensively. Can just be just a tragically bad defender defensively. Sometimes he can make something happen for you, though, so maybe he's the guy who's out there just because he can provide some kind of threat offensively, even though I think he's just as likely, you know, to do something really stupid. And then I don't know who your other choices are. Chandler Hutchison, Antonio Blakeney. I mean, those are Shaquille Harrison, Robin Lopez, Cameron Payne. I mean, those are other choices. I mean, maybe Parker's out there. I kind of think maybe I want Chandler Hutchison just because of his athleticism and because I think he could play defense better than these other choices. And Antonio Blakeney just for the shot making and floor spacing. You know, maybe with that I've got Levine, who's basically going to be running the offense, Blakeney and Arcidiacono in there for floor spacing and shooting, Hutchison and Carter to play defense and rebound and, you know, show some athleticism. I don't know, but there's not like a great five at this point. It really shows how much the Bulls are hurt by all these injuries that you have to have those types of discussions. And it is really just a difficult thing, I think, for the Bulls in that situation. And so speaking of that, you know, I talked quite a bit last podcast about how well Wendell Carter Jr. Was playing. And while I can't say he has completely kept up the same level of pace in all ways, as some of his point totals dropped, but his efficiency has been really excellent, you know, the past few games. 7-11 against the Pelicans and 5-6 against the Cavs. I think he really played pretty well in both games. I was a little surprised he didn't get more minutes in both games. I thought he was pretty excellent. You know, he's blocked three shots in each of those games. Become really a great shot blocker. I mean, if you go through, you know, his blocks, he is really just blocking a lot of shots, you know, per minute. And I think right now, let me see if I can look it up for you real quick, 2.9 blocks per 36 minutes. That's a pretty big amount. You know, his per 36 minutes stats right now, 16.3 points, 10.6 boards, 3.3 assists, 2.9 blocks, 1 steal, 4.2 fouls, and shooting 38% from the three-point line, 48% from the field, PER up to 19.5, true shooting percentage now up to 55%, which is fine. I think Wendell Carter Jr. has given you a whole lot out there. You know, and I'm really, really pleased with how well he's playing, continuing to progress. I think right now he is the best defender on this team, which is a kind of a scary thought given his amount of experience. And I don't know if I want to say the sky is the limit for this guy, but definitely he has got quite a bit of upside. This is a guy I think who's going to be able to do a whole lot in the NBA, and I think we're going to see more and more come from him as he gets more opportunities. So great thing to keep an eye on, and the positive progression continues from the last podcast for Wendell Carter Jr. Very excited to see how this team gels when Lowry comes back, which, you know, I think could be pretty much any game now. I'm not sure. I haven't looked to see if there's any official updates, but I think the 6-week point is pretty much up. It was 6 to 8 weeks. So I guess it's not entirely close if we've not heard which game it's going to be, but it can be any time right now. So Cristiano Felicio was pulled in the rotation in favor of Robin Lopez with the last game. It seems like that Cleveland game, Fred decided to make some rotational changes with Payne being out, Harrison being in, Archie Diacono going to starting, Felicio out, Lopez back in. Probably all good changes if you're trying to win games. I think that probably a fair way to look at how those things have gone. And so now let's discuss a little bit about the Jimmy Butler trade. So Jimmy Butler goes to Philadelphia. The Timberwolves get Dario Saric, and they get Covington. Patton also goes to the 76ers. The thing I thought was a little bit funny about this trade was that Patton was included in this. And now, who knows, Justin Patton may completely suck and not do anything. I mean, the guy has played a total of one game, last season, and he's been hurt. And, who knows if he will, play this year or not. I mean, but the guy still probably has some potential, right? I mean, a lot of times guys, take Embiid, for example, he got hurt. And then he basically wasn't playing for like 3 years, basically giving you very little. And now he's viewed as like a superstar. And so guys can turn around, and Patton has had no chance. So even though that seems like a nothing asset to go, I mean, I think that really is a decent asset that the Timberwolves gave up in this trade as well. And so they get Saric and Covington back, and it's fine, I guess. I mean, Saric, he's off to a very poor start this year, but maybe he'll be better. I mean, he definitely was trending upwards into a pretty good player last year, and then just seemed to fall off a cliff for whatever reason this year. And Covington, he's probably just is who he is at this point, right? He's been in the league a long time. His points per minute have been pretty steady, actually trending down a little bit from his earlier years, his efficiency trending up a little bit. He's an okay shooter, not an amazing shooter. He's off to a good start this year. I mean, I think Covington's a fine player. He's 28. There's no upside there. And so if I'm Minnesota, I just traded Jimmy Butler for these two guys. And I think the funny thing about trading Patton is it's like you now basically trade the exact assets you acquired when you traded to get Butler in the first place. And so it's really easy now to compare the situation as just total train wreck. Total train wreck for Minnesota in this thing. You basically gave up Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, and Chris Dunn for Dario Saric and Covington. That's just crazy bad. Just crazy, crazy bad. So did not work out well for Minnesota. Now, granted, the situations change. I get that. At one point, this seemed like a great thing. You wanted Jimmy Butler, but you couldn't convince him to stay. And now you got to get the best thing you can. Maybe this was the best thing. I don't know. Wasn't a great thing, though. So for Philadelphia, great trade. Philadelphia is going to be a force now. I know a lot of Bulls fans are like, oh, Jimmy Butler is going to tank their chemistry and things are going to go terribly. Maybe. I'm not going to tell you that can happen. But, Wiggins and Towns are both known to be lazy, poor defensive players. And so going to play with Embiid and Simmons, I don't think that same sentiment is true there. And so we'll see how things go. But this was a trade that gives Philadelphia a great chance to be back on the map. Outstanding trade for them. I guess if you want to put a negative spin on it, you would say, well, they could have signed these guys in the offseason next year and kept their assets and done it. And maybe they could have. But just like the Paul George situation, LA was a lock to sign Paul George until they weren't because he decided to stay in Oklahoma City. And so I think with Philadelphia, they traded a couple assets that weren't super valuable to bring in Jimmy Butler. Expectation is that Jimmy Butler will sign an extension in the offseason, and I think that becomes a really nice move for the Philadelphia 76ers. Of course, if Jimmy Butler decides to leave, which could still happen, all of a sudden that move looks a heck of a lot worse. So we'll see where things go from there in the Jimmy Butler trade. I will say this. A lot of people going, well, Chicago clearly won the trade now. Chicago is not impacted by this at all. If anything, this is a negative impact because Chicago now needs to try to leapfrog Philadelphia, which will be much more difficult after this trade. And so this is not a good deal for the Bulls. You know, I'd rather have Butler hang out in the Timberwolves or just trade it to some team in the West. The fact that Minnesota clearly lost this trade does not mean that the Bulls clearly won it. I know that seems a little counterintuitive, but there can be win-win trades, there can be lose-lose trades, and there can be win-lose trades. And so this trade is definitely a loss for the Timberwolves. I would say it's definitely a win for the Bulls at this point too, regardless of what happened with this, because I like what the Bulls have now as a core. We'll see what happens with this group. It's still early. I think it's going to be a win, though. I think Lowry is going to be a good player. I think watching Zach now that I feel confident that he will stay a reasonably good player. And both of those guys have star potential. And Chris Dunn still has a chance to be a pretty good player. And so I think what happens with the Bulls here is that they have an excellent chance of this being a really great move for them. But we'll have to wait and see. I can't be more excited, honestly, to see what this team is going to look like when Lowry is back, and to a lesser extent when Dunn is back. I think Lowry is going to be a straight positive for this team. He's going to replace Jabari in the starting lineup. And then Jabari going to the bench, I think, will be a better fit for the bench because you'll get some more scoring, and he could actually take more shots, be a little more selfish. And I think that the bench will need that, and he can provide that, and it'll be a good fit. So I'm excited for that change. Chris Dunn, I think, is really interesting. You could make a case right now that Ryan Arcidiacono should not lose the starting job when Chris Dunn comes back. I'm not going to agree with that case. I'll tell you that up front. But you could make it. I mean, Chris Dunn has been super sloppy with turnovers, can't shoot. You know, it doesn't complement the other players. I think Diakono with Levine and Lowry and Carter in the game and Holiday, I suppose, would be the other likely guy there. But I think I would almost love to just see the lineup Carter, Markkanen, Blakeney, Arcidiacono, and Levine. Just leave Diakono and Blakeney in the corners, and Carter and Lowry could also space the floor. You could have four shooters with Levine who can also shoot with the ball. I mean, I think that would actually be a pretty deadly offensive lineup. And the Bulls don't have anyone who can play defense anyway, really. I mean, I guess Dunn a little bit. But we'll see. We'll see. I think the thing with Dunn, you have to start him because you have to find out what you have here. You guys just see, is this a guy we're going to extend? Is this a guy who's a long-term piece? And I think that's a big question. So you got to start Chris Dunn because you got to find that out. He definitely has more ceiling, but someone just needs to get done to stop turning the ball over, and he needs to hit three-point shots at a respectable clip, and he needs to not take too many bad shots. Chris Dunn is a very low true shooting percentage player. He's a very inefficient scorer. He can apply some pressure to the defense, which Diakono clearly cannot do. He can punish you if you leave him, but he can't apply pressure. Dunn can apply pressure, but he needs to get his scoring efficiency up if he is going to be a starting guard. I mean, he just needs to. You can't be sub 50% true shooting percentage and be a viable starter. It just doesn't happen. Now, maybe if you're just an all-world defender and you're not taking many shots and you're a tremendous passer and you're not making many turnovers and you're rebounding and you're getting all these assists and other stuff, maybe. But Chris Dunn's not really doing all of that. I mean, he's definitely making a ton of turnovers. He's taking too many shots for his shooting percentage. I will say, you know, I think he's a good rebounding guard, but he needs to definitely do more. And as I said earlier, and as Fred yelled at me on the Big Red Bus, maybe we should give Chris Dunn more than one game before we just throw in the towel on him. Maybe that seems like it would be a fair thing to do. So we'll wait till Dunn gets back. But I think it'll be interesting. I don't think his job is completely set the way things are going. Anyway, that will wrap it up for this edition of the Bulls Beat. I'm excited for the next game against the Mavericks. to watch Luka Doncic play again. I think that's going to be a lot of fun, and I enjoyed watching him. I want to see if this guy is for real or not. I'm a little more excited about him. I know I was very down in the draft, but I was a little excited. So exciting week, and we will see what happens, and I'll talk to you guys next week.